Hey, it's Jamie Scrimger. When I became a stepmom, I quickly realized that while moms are encouraged to keep it real, there's a big double standard when it comes to stepmoms. So I decided to start the conversation myself. Thriving as a stepmom doesn't just come from conversations about being a stepmom, though. Here, we dive into marriage, relationships, personal growth, and more. My mission? Inspire you to live a kick-ass life while bringing you along as I create my own. This is the Kick-Ass Stepmom Podcast. Hello, hello. Welcome back to the podcast. Guys, Bethany Webster is back on the podcast this week. It is her second time on the show, and I am so grateful to be able to have this conversation. I feel like I've been saying that a lot lately, but I feel like the guests that we have been able to get on the show, well, it just blows my mind. So yes, super freaking grateful. So Bethany Webster, she has a master's degree in psychology, as well as 22 years experience as a client in long-term psychotherapy. She's a trained life coach and the author of the book, Healing Your Inner Mother. And she is considered the global expert on healing the mother wound and was actually first to bring the term mother wound into the stream of conversation. So Bethany teaches women to discover an inner mother so that they can grow and emerge as their full selves. This is hands down one of my favorite conversations that I have ever had on the podcast. I could have talked to her for hours and afterwards I was just like, wow, I am not even exaggerating when I say that Bethany's work literally changed my life. She changed the way that I look at my relationships with my daughter and my stepdaughter and the way I see my relationship with my mom, the way I understand myself, the way I see my relationship with my mother-in-law and other women in my life, the way I look at female friendships. It is just wild. It is a must-listen episode. And so with that, I want to welcome Bethany Webster back to the Kick-Ass Stepmom Podcast. Enjoy. Bethany, welcome back to the Kick-Ass Stepmom Podcast. I'm very excited. I'm very excited for today.
Thank you so much, Jamie. I'm really excited too. I'm excited to be back and for our conversation today.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to press record right away because I do feel like before we dive into everything, I want to say, you know, our first podcast episode that we did together and even just reading your book and the work, and I'm sure you hear this all the time. This is not new on how powerful this work is, but it really was, and I'm almost getting like chills saying it, like the catalyst to so much growth for me.
Oh, wow.
As a person. And having so many things in my life makes sense, right? There's so many things, and we'll dive into all the things, the mother wound, all of your work. And I wanted to start by saying that because it truly was, I think everyone in their personal growth journey and can pinpoint that one thing that they heard, and maybe it's that they're in the place to hear it at that time or something that just really like triggers so much more change than they ever saw coming. And that was your book for me. I remember listening to the audiobook up at our cottage and my husband coming in. I'm like, I can't talk right now. And I'm just kind of going through it all and puttering around and then having to get the actual book. And so I could go through and highlight everything because I like to, you know, feel things in my hands. But yeah, it really is powerful stuff. So I'm excited to have you back on and I'm excited to just dive into it again because we have so many new listeners and the show's grown so much. So
yes,
this stuff doesn't get old.
Thank you. And thank you for sharing that, Jamie. I had no idea. And that's so awesome to hear like how catalytic the book finds you at the right time. And it was like a lot of growth came from that. And, you know, that's my soul's wish. So hearing that is really powerful for me. So thank you so much for taking the time to share your feedback.
Yeah, I'm so happy. And so I think probably the best place to start, so because we have so many new listeners and maybe they haven't gone back and listened to all the other episodes, let's talk about the mother wound. What is the mother wound? And I know you have your free ebook that really walks through exactly what it is. So I'm going to link that for everyone below because it can be a complicated topic.
It is, for sure.
And if you really need to kind of read it and after you listen to this, you're like, I need a little bit more, like that's a really good resource. So I'll link that for everyone too. But why don't you take it away?
Sure. So the mother wound is a set of internalized beliefs and patterns that we internalize through our relationship with our mothers that cause us to believe that we're not good enough, that there's something wrong with us. And the reason why all of us have the mother wound is because we live in a patriarchal culture, which many of us on the planet, most of the planet does. And the way I define patriarchy is very simple. It's just that a culture in which women are less than, thought of as less than men. So that definition itself is scarcity, right? It's, you know, to be less than is to be not good enough. So it's kind of this atmosphere that we grow up with, and our moms, for better or for worse, you know, some moms pass down some of these messages unconsciously, totally implicitly, some more overtly and explicitly, but a lot of it's to a number of different forms. Our moms can pass down these messages like, don't rock the boat, don't be too big, don't bring too much attention to yourself, you know, don't you dare want too much for yourself, or don't be selfish. And sometimes our moms said this stuff to try to protect us in a world that really, you know, you become a target if you do those things, right? Because it's not in compliance with patriarchy. But also, it's not just what our own mothers internalize themselves, you know, of course, because our mothers and grandmothers and great grandmothers also internalized all this stuff to survive. But also, there's another piece of it, which is our mom's own trauma. So whatever unhealed traumas our moms went through, whether it was, you know, physical abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, you know, whatever our moms have unresolved, she will pass on, even with the best of intentions, or even if she's in a really, you know, even if she has like a mental illness or something, all across the spectrum, you know, there's a wide spectrum of the mother wound, and we all fall somewhere on that spectrum. And we all have it, men and women. And the reason why it's so insidious, and I wanted to break the taboo around this, is because it's the ways that we sabotage ourselves as a means to get safety and approval from other people. Mm-hmm. So it's those things like you feel yourself shrinking, you feeling like I have to be small in order to be loved, or I'm going to stay silent about my feelings because I don't want to threaten the relationship. Or, you know, it's just those little things that are part of a larger wound that's personal. It's also cultural. And it's also planetary, you know? And so my theory around the mother wound is multi-dimensional. It's not just the personal stuff with our own moms. And I think some people are disappointed to find that out because it's like, oh man, this thing, I thought it was big. I knew it was big, but it's actually part of, so I think it's part of a larger awakening that we're all having. And it's not about blaming our mothers. It's not about making our moms wrong or trying to make them less than, or, you know, trying to just like be better than them or blame them. It's not that at all. It's about, how can I better understand myself so that I can heal and be the best person I can be? And that necessitates looking at our lineages and our history and our development, because another reason the mother wound is so insidious is because it's not just like, you know, beliefs that we just take on from others. It's woven into our brain chemistry, into our nervous systems. So we've learned to equate safety with these beliefs. It's not like we just bonded with our mother as a person. We bonded with her beliefs. We bonded with her patterns, because that's the only relationship in our lives, the mother-child relationship, where we're like one, we're merged physically and emotionally and biologically and spiritually in a way with our moms. It's the only relationship that's like that. And so it is primary. And that's one painful part of it, but it's also a liberating part, I think, because when we can do this deeper work, and it's always ground level personal, you know, looking at our own personal mother wound is the most important, we can change, we can heal, we can change the direction of future lineages of, you know, our descendants, the people that come after us. And if we don't have children, the people in our communities. So I think it's a powerful, powerful time right now to be a woman, to be a human being, to be on planet Earth, because there's so much upheaval happening. And I believe that the mother wound is kind of like this amazing point of healing. And it's hard, you know, I don't want to, you know, minimize, this work is deep. This work is not for the faint of heart. It's really intense. But the good news is you can go at your own pace and you are in control of your healing journey. So you can dip your foot in, your toe in as much as you want to. And that's empowering too, you know, whatever work I think we do, whatever tiny step we take has big ripple effects. It has reverberations to all of us. So I really have deep respect, especially for moms and stepmoms who do this work, because the truth is kids don't need perfect moms. They don't need moms that are like Instagrammable and perfect and say the right thing and don't get angry. They just need moms who are on their path, who are like doing their own work, and that model, that resiliency and that commitment to their growth. I think that's what benefits kids the most.
Yeah, so good. And I totally agree. You know, something that I was reading on your Instagram a little bit ago, you're talking about like the grief, right? And
yeah,
what sometimes our daughters, what they spark in us. And it's almost like this, and you word it better than me, but there's like this grief of the mom, and they look at their daughter and they have all these like opportunities and they can do things differently. And they think about all the things that maybe they have sacrificed,
right,
because of where they're at in society or what things were like at that point in time. And like, you know, I think about even my grandma and then my mom and then me, and then like, you know, my daughter and my stepdaughter, just the freedom that women have and the, you don't have to sacrifice as much. And still we sacrifice a lot. And a lot of our worth is wrapped up in, you know, caring for others and sacrificing and all of that, but it's just getting less and less. And so I can just see how from generation to generation, it's like you look at the next generation, like, well, you're almost jealous,
right?
Right.
Yes.
Of that freedom. And it reminds you of maybe what you could have been or what you could have done. And I do, I look at my stepdaughter and my daughter and I'm like, oh my gosh, I wish that I was in your generation. Mm. Like I think of, you know, Madison right now, she's 21 years old. Wow. She's in her third year university and she can do anything. And she's like, I don't know if I want to have kids. Maybe I do, maybe I don't. Or, you know, her friends are like, I don't know if I want to get married. Like everyone's just changing the expectations. And
yeah,
I do have a lot of jealousy towards that, right? I'm like, oh my God, like you can do whatever you want. And like, you even have like social media where you can see all the possibilities. I didn't really have, you know, I was kind of in the beginning of social media. Like I remember when Facebook came out and it was like just for people in university. And I was so excited when our university got accepted. Like they just have the world at their fingertips. And there's this whole generation who are questioning.
Totally.
Questioning what you are supposed to do as a woman.
Yes.
And I freaking love it. But I'm so pissed that I wasn't born here because I would have just really rocked that, right? And I'm doing what I'm doing in my own space. But wow, what a generation to be where they're at.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I can see that from, you know, my mom and maybe my grandma and just like trying to keep you small.
Right.
But again, is that mother wound, is it unconscious for them?
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
Like that's the thing. It's totally unconscious.
Totally unconscious. Absolutely unconscious. And I think we're living at a really interesting time where a lot of the stuff that was unconscious in previous generations, like it was just the way things were and the values were different and the way they saw the world was different. And now we're making so many of those underground things conscious. We're bringing them up. We're shedding the taboos. We're analyzing them, destigmatizing them. So it existed for sure, but it just wasn't named. It wasn't named.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with each generation that becomes more free, like you said, there's more freedom to name. And we're on this great acceleration point, I think, where more and more stuff is being disclosed. More people are talking about their real experiences. There's a lot of research now on trauma healing and neuroscience and neurobiology. And so we know now, like one of the big things that I think about a lot in the same vein is like, you know, our parents and grandparents thought, a lot of them, you know, if you feed and clothe a child, you're good. You know, that their emotions are completely not that important, that kids don't remember stuff, or, you know, as long as you educate them, give them some maybe religious upbringing, some families, and you just, you know, feed them well, keep, you know, that was it. And now we know, research tells us that it's actually the emotional development and the bond with the parent that really is the key determinant of a child's well-being and optimal development. It's actually the inverse. Like if a child has healthy development emotionally and a secure attachment bond, they're actually more resilient to things like if there wasn't enough food, or if, you know, if there was a trauma, like a job loss or other things, kids can fare so much better.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of those flips. And there's many of them where, and I think maybe some of the older generations might be threatened. Like, what is this natural parenting or attachment parenting? Like that didn't exist when we were growing up. And it can be confronting for them too. Like, I think a lot of older boomers maybe might be grappling or in denial. Like some of them are just like, I did the best I could. I don't want to talk about, you know, things.
And they're not in the place to hear it. There's a lot of, I think, people who, when their kids are having these conversations about trauma from their childhood or their mother wounds or, you know, why they have a certain attachment style based on how they were raised and things like that.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of parents who are taking offense to that.
Definitely.
Right. And it feels like an attack on them. And I will say, I was just actually talking to my sister before we popped on this. And my mom said after our last interview, she's like, that's the last time I'll ever listen to Jamie's podcast. Cause we have a very complicated relationship.
Ours, you and I?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And I was like, I thought I was like pretty vanilla about what I was sharing, but because they can't look at kind of, they did the best they could with what they knew.
Right.
Right. True. And there's this whole new way of doing things. And I do think there's like this, the objections to the mother wound, right?
Oh, there's
saying
a ton
like,
of
oh,
them.
Well, of all the things that I did for you, or, you know, I sacrificed everything for you. And I think it's hard for people to process.
It really is. Like, it was great to hear that you loved the book and that it had a huge thing. I've had people, more than one, tell me that they threw the book. They're reading the book and they threw it across the room. I think that's a common thing because it's like, I think that's actually a good thing. Like, if you're confronted with something that feels like so confronting, what that says is there's enormous truth and empowerment in there for you if you're willing to get support with looking at whatever, you know, that is. Mm-hmm. But I think like what you said is true. A lot of people take it as an attack. But for those who are ready, it can be a truly amazing thing, because this is the excellent thing about the mother wound that I love so much is the healing process is, number one, when you work on it, you're not just working on one area. You're working on your whole life because it's all connected.
It's wild.
And the second thing is, if you can hear your adult child, you know, tell you about something that's not working or didn't work for them, that was painful, you can heal that relationship if you're willing to get support. And you can also heal the child in you. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's not just like, you have to take responsibility and that's painful, but it's also like you get to heal the child that you were when your parent, because it didn't start with you, right? Like the saying goes, you were also, you know, doing what you learned, what you internalized. And so you can actually heal the child in you. So I think that's one of the most amazing parts mm-hmm. is for those who are brave and courageous and ready and who have done, I think it does help if someone has already been open to, you know, personal growth and stuff, because like my parents in particular, they hadn't done any work at all. So it's like, there's no other option for them but to see this as they're wrong or bad or being blamed, because mm-hmm. there's not really a strong concept in their value system about responsibility and integrity and how that's a strength, you know? It just depends on where someone's at in their evolution and their growth. Mm-hmm. And we can't make that different. That's part of healing the mother wound too, is like accepting that our moms are fathers, anybody, grandmothers, they can't change. We can't change them or make them understand. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the hardest parts of healing the mother wound, but also the most empowering, because if we can accept that people are not changeable, that frees up all so much energy, you know, for ourselves and for how we want to live.
Yeah. And, you know, you say how it's not an attack on someone else. It's really just you making the decision to fully live your life and be the person that you're, you know, meant to be, or be authentically you. Like, it's not about an attack. It's just saying, this is my story and this is why I am the way I am. And this is the work that I'm doing on myself. So I love that piece too. Now, how does the mother wound show up in the mother-daughter relationship? So can you give some examples for those who are like, okay, I kind of get it, but like, what does this look like in that mother-daughter relationship?
Sure. So there's two parts of it, actually. You know, the mother wound shows up in ourselves, and it also shows up with our moms. So the way it showed up for me, the way I first recognized it, was just noticing there were things about myself that were not working, like just feeling stuck, feeling like depressed. I started to have panic attacks. This is what, like when I was in college, but you know, any kind of like feeling stuck or mental health challenges is like a sign that something's up. And with your mom, it can be things like, you know, having stress or tension of any kind with your mom. That's like the very basic, is like, something's not right with my mom. I don't want to call her. I don't want to talk to her. I feel frustrated. I feel stuck. I feel angry at her. Those are signs that there's a mother wound there. And it can be many, many different manifestations. It could be like your mom's codependent with you. Like, she takes up too much space. She wants to be with you too often. She wants to talk to you on the phone too much. She's too needy. Or it could be like your mom's really distant and you want more of a connection with her, and she's like just checked out, doesn't initiate connection with you, or somewhere in between. You know, it could be a lot of different manifestations like that. Or it could be just simple, like you have a good relationship with your mom. It's pretty peaceful, but there's something about your mom's value system, maybe that feels like it's not a good fit. Like you don't feel like you can be truly authentic around her because she might get offended, or, you know, even if you have a great relationship with your mom, the mother wound can be on that cultural level where it's like, yeah, emotionally we're tight, but if I ever want to, like, you know, do something different than her, that could create conflict. So there's a lot of ways it can manifest, but I want to say more about within ourselves. So the mother wound can manifest in the ways that we see the world and our relationships with other people. So it can show up in, like, feeling competitive or feeling comparisonitis, you know, with other women, feeling, you know, like I said, depression. Eating disorders almost always have a mother wound component in my experience. Things like feeling really controlling, like if you're someone who's like really perfectionistic or needs to control things, that can be a manifestation of the mother wound as well. So at the core of a lot of those things is, though, this feeling like I'm not good enough as I am. There's something wrong with me and I need to either control my environment or control other people or change myself so that I can finally rest and feel good enough. You know, that's kind of like the underbelly of what all of those manifestations really are. And so at the heart of that is actually the child in us, right? So we might be extremely intelligent, successful women who our lives are going pretty well, but there's a little girl inside who sometimes can get triggered and kind of assault or, you know, take the wheel of our lives. And it can be, you know, things like suddenly at work or something, we feel like, oh my God, I feel like a little girl all of a sudden. I feel out of control, numbing out, or, you know, compulsive shopping or things like that. Those are kind of ways that we've coped with the things that happen to us as children. So a lot of the problems that we have on the surface are just ways that we've had to soothe and numb ourselves from pain that we went through as little girls, right? Whatever pain or suffering we experienced in our families, we had to adapt to that. We had to defend ourselves. We had to create false stories or masks on who does the world need us to be? Who does my mom need me to be? And we adapted. And that's a wise survival mechanism. I want to say a lot of the ways we shame ourselves for being not good enough or having issues, those helped us survive those really tough times, whether we were neglected, abused, or shamed as children. We had to survive that. We were just little girls by ourselves trying to, like, survive very stressful situations. So I invite people to have compassion, you know, for yourself, however the mother wound might be showing up, that there's a little girl in you who's suffering. And she really is what I call the mother gap. Those are the places where we felt unmothered or overmothered or unsafe in some way. So a lot of the ways we cope is to create safety out there, whether it's like, you know, for me, it was always like a new destination, a new relationship or a new degree, a new something or other. And then that usually can feed us a little bit for a while, but the safety we really want is on the inside, where we can feel like, okay, stuff's going to happen in life. It's natural. It's part of life, but I'm going to be okay no matter what. And the only way we can create that inner safety is really through inner mothering, which is, like, in my opinion, learning how to mother the little girl in us the way that we needed to be mothered. So the very things that we longed for or missed from our own mom, the good news is we can start to give those things to our inner kids. When I say inner kids, because a lot of us have many, you know, we have a baby self, maybe a teen, a toddler, or, you know, there's lots of ages that might be active in you, depending upon when you felt a lot of the neglect or trauma that you went through as a kid. Again, on a spectrum, everybody's kind of different in what they went through.
So it's the new year, and while I'm not into New Year's resolutions per se, I'm all about setting intentions. And my intention for 2024 is to look and feel my best. And in order to do that, hydration is key. Personally, I try to have at least 4 40-ounce Stanleys, so, like, you know, those big tumblers that everyone's carrying around on Instagram. I try to have about 4 of those a day, and it has changed the way that I feel. But it's not just water in the Stanley. At least one of my tumblers each day has Element salt in it. Element is my go-to electrolyte drink. I have been drinking it for years. They've been a longtime sponsor of the podcast, and honestly, I'm just obsessed. Now, a growing body of research has revealed that optimal health outcomes occur at sodium levels that are 2 to 3 times the government recommendation. Salt has got a bad rep, but it is not a bad thing. We actually need it. So Element is a delicious electrolyte drink that is formulated to help anyone with their electrolyte needs. And, you know, most electrolyte drinks contain sugar and other junk, but Element is different. It has everything you need and nothing that you don't. There are no BS ingredients here. So 1,000 milligrams of sodium, 200 milligrams of potassium, 60 milligrams of magnesium. I drink it every single day. I drink it in the morning, either before or after a workout, before or after I indulge in cocktails. If I am having a little bit of a hangover, Element definitely helps. I'm actually sipping one right now because sometimes in the afternoon when I want a snack or a coffee, I go for an Element instead. It's kind of like a little treat. I just love the way it tastes, specifically the watermelon flavor. Now, Darren and my stepson Ethan love the lime, but watermelon and raspberry are it for me. So if you are interested in trying Element, go to www.drinkelement.com/kickassstepmom. And if you order through that link, you'll also receive a free sample pack so that you can try all the flavors. So that's www.drinkelement.com/kickassstepmom. And if you order through that link, you're going to get a sample pack with all of the flavors. So this way you can figure out which one you love the most. Proper hydration is key. www.drinkelement.com/kickassstepmom to get a free sample pack with purchase.
Hello, 2024. Post-holidays and the start of new year call for a relationship reset, at least for Darren and I. We've actually been doing a lot of talking about how we can do things better this year. We've spent a lot of time reflecting on last year, what worked, what needed work, what we can do to communicate better, and how we can prioritize our relationship. And we've been spending a lot of time with our calendar and just being very deliberate and open about our priorities for 2024. We both have some big goals individually and as a couple and as a family, so we really want to stay accountable. Now, you might have heard me talk about the Coupla app before. So this is a couples app that is really taking the world by storm. And it is such a great tool if you also want to get aligned this year. With over 200,000 happy couples using its features to stay connected, it truly is a game changer. So here's the deal. With a shared calendar, to-do list and reminders, a date planner and a chat, it really has everything that you need to prioritize your relationship and stay aligned in 2024. Now, this is especially helpful for my fellow stepmoms who can get blindsided by schedule changes with the ex. Coupla can help you communicate and manage your schedule so you do not get surprised by a last-minute schedule changes. The calendar also allows you to prioritize date nights and quality time with your partner, and you can seamlessly navigate the calendar with conflict and scheduling challenges that just arise from juggling work and kids and exes and all the things. Coupla also has the only task manager and to-do list specifically designed for couples. Beyond simply managing groceries, couples also utilize these lists to organize everything from planning their next vacation or managing a home renovation, communicating about goals or planning an exciting date night and keeping track of gift ideas for partners and kids. Like, there's so many things you can communicate about with this app. So Coupla is offering a 50% discount off annual subscriptions for any of my listeners for the first year. So all you have to do is enter Jamie via the link in the show notes below. You can also download Coupla from the App Store. And then after the onboarding on the subscription page, you just click redeem offer and then enter the code Jamie to get your discount. So again, you can download Coupla from the link in my show notes, and you can also download it in the App Store, Coupla. And after you go through the onboarding on the subscription page, you can click redeem offer and enter the code Jamie to get your discount off an annual subscription. Does this show up in terms of judgment with women?
Absolutely.
Because I was thinking about that a lot today when I was preparing for this. And just, it's really interesting, I think, especially now. You know, women are realizing, okay, I can make money online, or I can do something different, or I can put myself out there, or I can, you know, change the narrative, right? I really can. And I'll tell you the story. So I was having drinks with my friends a couple of weeks ago, and one of the girls I was out with was just being really judgmental about other women and how her and her other friends like talk about the women who are doing the online thing and, you know, cutting them up and things like that. Well, I thought it was really interesting. I'm like, you know, that's what I do, right?
Yeah.
But it was just talking about how, like, why do they think people care? Or why are they doing that? Or why are they trying to start something online? And kind of making fun of the whole thing. And I was like, well, that was really rude. And I was thinking back to it. I'm like, what does that spark in someone? Like, why do we as women, because, you know, people will say, oh, don't worry about what other people are doing or what other people think about you. They're not thinking about you at all. I don't think that's true. There are a lot of women who are thinking a lot about other women and who are talking a lot of crap,
yeah,
and who are judging and all of those things. Like, that's actually very true. And there are a lot of women right now in this space and time who want to do something different and they want to like change their narrative and they want to step out of the comfort zone, but they're scared of what other people are going to think.
Yeah.
And I don't want to sugarcoat it, like rightfully so, because it's almost like certain women feel uncomfortable with other women changing that narrative.
Yeah. What did you sense was going on with these women who were like cutting down these other women? What do you think was going on with them?
I don't know. Right. Well, I think it's an insecurity thing. It's like, what does it spark in you? And part of me is like, why are you even following people who you don't resonate with? There was just a bunch of questions there, but I thought it was really judgmental. But then, and my feelings were hurt, to be quite honest, because I was like, hey, that's what I did.
Yeah. To say that around you.
Yeah. And I, you know, I'm beyond the point where like I've established I have my business. Like, this is what I do. You can knock it all you want. But, you know, 5 years ago, that would have really crippled me. 5 years ago, I was telling people, yeah, I was a stay-at-home mom. My daughter was in daycare before she was one. I've never been a stay-at-home mom. I've been working on this for a very long time, but I always lied about it because it's the thing. Does it make people uncomfortable? Mm-hmm. Does it make other women uncomfortable when you're doing that? Or why are you gossiping? So I think that's an element of the mother wound just showing up in all of our female relationships, right? So it's maybe not just our daughters that are triggering us unconsciously. It's other women who are maybe stepping into themselves. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's a great example because I know like my own mother was definitely like that, a cut her down gossiper. And it always disturbed me to see that. Like, she'd be nice to someone's face and then she'd talk smack about everybody. And it was like the women she hung out with were like that. And I think if you have had a mother like that, maybe not that degree, but somewhere in that, or if you were exposed to that, it can really create a crippling feeling. Like when I started my business, my mother was a troll. She would show up everywhere online and be like, you're a fraud and, you know, you're blah, 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 blah. Like, she would try to like take me down.
So she was a little offended.
She was a little offended that I had the, you know, but usually those people, the truth of it is those people are in pain.
100%.
The people that do that, they're suffering. They're in fear. They're in jealousy. So that's why it's not worth listening to, because whatever, you know, they're not people you want around you in your world, and they're going to do what they're going to do no matter what. Mm-hmm. And it took me a while to realize, like, that's why those kind of people bothered me for so long, because it was like that to have your own mother attack you is very disturbing. And to see your mother almost attack other people, that by proxy is disturbing too, but it's so normalized because of the culture we live in. Like, there's shows and sitcoms and things that show women being catty and, mm-hmm, you know, so it takes a lot of strength and a lot of work to just say, I'm not going to participate in that. I'm not going to be around that. I don't want that. I want to have a different kind of relationship with myself and with other women. Mm-hmm. And it can be lonely too, you know, especially if you're coming from a background where that was normalized, either with your friend group or others, you know, around you. But it's really powerful to just like assert that that's not something you're going to give energy to.
Yeah.
Something I thought about a lot before I started my business was, because I was afraid, and I was afraid of getting hate mail. Like I said, I got it from my own mother. I got it from many people emailing me like, who do you think you are? And you're blaming mothers and I hope you burn in hell. And now I laugh at them. But in the past, it was scary. But it was also like, someone said to me, make your mission more important than your fear. Mm-hmm. And that has always stayed with me, that yes, it's okay to be afraid. It's okay to fear being judged or burned at the stake, all of those things. That's a real fear. And a lot of us have those fears from real experiences that we lived through that were painful. And you can also not give them any power. And that's part of healing the mother wound, is to just like say, my mission or my integrity or whatever is more important than these people and their petty ways, mm-hmm, that are really their own stuff just kind of thrown at you. And you just have to learn to not let it bother you. But it's a defining, and I think that's me, the delicious part of it is it's a place where you can define yourself and say, what are my values? And for me, what helped me get through weird, sticky points like that was my safe place is not with other people. It's with my integrity, mm-hmm, you know, that like that became the bedrock of my life. And what I mean by integrity is just doing what I know to be true and right in the moment. And that's all any of us can really do, right? Is just based on our own experience and our own values. What kind of person do you want to be? How do you want to live? And then when you make choices based on that, it's a real North Star. It's a real guiding point. And it also can be a departure point from your family of origin or your friends. And it was for me. Like, I don't have any contact with any of my family. I lost a lot of friends, but it was a choice. And it was a choice because it's like, I made my integrity first above, you know, this attachment to validation. And a lot of that is grieving, you know, grieving that you can't take your family with you. You can't take some of your old friends with you. It is a lonely path at times, but there's this inner deliciousness that develops where it's kind of like being self-actualized. Like, you make your priority, your mission, your values, and you live by that. And it's a really cool adventure that has its ups and downs, but it has a deliciousness that I think we need more people to do that. I think,
yeah,
give ourselves permission. And like you said, the women out there who are like, I want to do it differently. I want to, you know, I would say go for it.
Yeah, do it.
And who cares what they think? They do disappear.
For sure.
Block and delete.
You know, you get to the point where it doesn't even matter, right? Like, you've made it and they're like, oh, you know, one thing that came to mind when you were saying like, this is my North Star. What I really like to think about is, how do I want to feel I am done with interactions with people? Or how do I want to feel in my home? How do I want to feel every single day?
Yeah.
And that has really been my North Star in terms of, you know, my relationships. And, you know, I, at this point, don't have a good relationship with my mom. I don't have a relationship with my mom, I would say, but that's because this is how I want to feel. And I'm on my healing journey. Right. She's on her healing journey. And
yeah,
being okay with that and kind of losing that whole enmeshment piece, right?
Yeah.
And that whole idea was like, well, that's your mom, you know, that mentality, like, oh, well, she's your mom, right? Yes. Or, you know, she sacrificed so much for you. And I'm not talking about my mom in specific right now, just like, this is the messaging.
It is. Yeah.
But I really hate that whole, well, she sacrificed so much, or I did so much, because you had decided to have a kid. Like, are we supposed to throw a parade because you chose to be a mom? Like, you chose to be a parent. Like, I don't need to throw you a parade because you gave me food and like took care of me. Like, that was actually the law. Like, you actually have to do that. Do you know what I mean though?
Right.
Like,
no, I do. Oh my God.
It's just this
I
whole
do.
Like self-sacrificing for your family of origin when like, how are we going to break any patterns?
Exactly. Exactly. That's actually, I talk about that in step two of my online course, is specifically because it's such a huge thing that so many people deal with, which is looking at the stereotypes and the myths about the mother wound. And it's like this dragon at the gate. That's just like, how dare you, you know, how dare you talk about your mother? You must be jealous. You must be ungrateful. You must be, you know, what did your mother ever do to deserve it? This is the voice of the past. It's the voices of patriarchy that are trying to silence you, you know? It's kind of like the same voice that says, oh, did you gain some weight? You know, or it's kind of that same taunting voice that really just wants to silence women. Mm-hmm. Because when we speak out, change fucking happens.
Right.
It really does. And, you know, our culture, our world has had a really unhealthy relationship with mothers, where mothers are either idealized, like holiness next to God, or they're blamed for everything. Like, that's true. It's either or, it's a black or white, hated or blamed type of thing. And so there's no actual real place for mothers to be seen as human beings who make mistakes, who mess up, but also have their own beautiful path that they get to do that. And, you know, so mothers are also in defense, like, how dare you question me? I did my best. It's all part of the same problem. Mm-hmm. And my goal with healing the mother wound and getting the workout is to kind of just break all that apart and just say, you know, let's talk about our authentic relationships with our moms and what it's really like, kind of like what you're doing with stepmoms. Like, let's remove the shame about our true experience, because when you start picking it apart, what you start to see is that this doesn't help moms either. Like, moms, older moms might say, well, I did my best, but actually they have a lot of pain that they never got to talk about. Like, my grandmother, she, you know, was an alcoholic. It was totally hush hush. And, you know, she struggled with six kids and she was inside her home and it was like a hellscape in there. But in the 50s and 60s, you didn't talk about any of that. But when we look at the mother, when we get to really open up and say, wow, you know, there was so much suffering for women, you know, you were either medicated, you know, away, you're hysterical. If you couldn't cope, you could either be a nurse or a secretary. You know, those were your options. You couldn't get a credit card by yourself. You know, you couldn't get divorced. So our homes of the past were like, you know, just hellscapes of trauma and shame and all of that. And no one could talk about it. And there was this value that family loyalty is silence. That's being a good girl. You don't tell anybody. You keep your mouth shut. You're seen and not heard. And that was seen as valorous, like being a good girl and a good mom, you know, back then was you don't say anything. Even if your husband's doing all kinds of insanity, you stay married. You stay, you know, you just put on the show for everyone. Mm-hmm. And that veneer of okayness was seen as, you know, the ideal. And now here we are and we're like, ripping that open and like a reckoning, like, no, that wasn't okay. The value shift is not in hiding trauma, but in exposing it and saying, look, this is the truth of what is going on. And so that's very threatening to people, but it's also, you know, we have to lance the boil. We have to, if we really want to heal and live in a different world, we have to look at unpleasant things.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
And some of us can do that and some of us can't.
Well, it's very uncomfortable.
It's very uncomfortable, but it's very exciting too. I like to always say, this is exciting. The mother wound is something that is not something we need to be ashamed of, but something like a portal into our power, mm-hmm. a portal into truth, a portal into awakening, into empowerment, into being your real self. Mm-hmm. You know, like the little girl inside of you that got shushed and hurt and neglected, she gets to finally get the mothering she needs. And then your gifts start to be available to other people. We're not just doing this for ourselves. We're doing this for the world too. You know, we're doing this as part of a cultural shift. And I think remembering that, you know, in those private, unglamorous moments where you might be, ugh, feeling the mother wound stuff, like really realizing what you went through as a kid, feeling the grief about that and the anger. Remember that you're not alone, that this is the most brave work I think any human being can do, because you're healing your lineage. You're changing the whole pattern, a template, you know, with every breath you take, every private, unglamorous, awful feeling moment that you can get through with support, of course, you know, you get closer and closer to, you know, yourself and to the truth of who you are. And you get to model that and live that. And other people, it gives them permission to as well. So it's part of a cultural shift, I think.
If you've been around since the beginning, you know that I created this platform and community 100% on my own. Google searches and podcast episodes and help desks are my business coaches, and that includes creating my website. Speaking of my website, if you've been on it in the last year or so, you know that it looks freaking amazing. Yeah, I know, humble brag, my website is bomb. I get a lot of questions about who designed it and how much it cost. And here's the deal. I did my own website. I just bought a template from Tonic Site Shop and customized it so that it's aligned with my brand, my messaging, and my style. Tonic Site Shop has redefined the website template. So throw out everything you think you know about creating a website and check out Tonic Stat. These are completely customizable websites designed for people who give a damn. I've heard people say that your website does not matter. That is complete crap. These days, your website matters big time. These templates are incredibly user-friendly with a drag-and-drop design. You use this intuitive platform called Showit to customize your website template without needing to know a single line of code. You just drag and drop like it's hot. No tiers, no code, no limits. Head to www.jamiescrimger.com/tonic to choose your template and then use the code Jamie15 to get 15% off. These templates are totally worth the investment and help me take my brand and my community to the next level. I can't wait to see what you create. Can you talk about the grief process? Because, you know, we talk about how a lot of women are almost just grieving or mourning what they wanted to become or what they wish they would have become, or just, can you unpack that a little bit?
Yeah. I'm so glad you're asking about grief, because it really is such a huge part of the healing the mother wound process. And I've coached so many women now. I've been doing this for 10 years. I can't believe it. It's been 10 years. People would say when I came out with this work, well, why do we have to look at the past? The past is in the past. It's not now, but the past is what lives in us now. And what I see as like the number one thing, and this is so exciting for me as a coach, when women can start to realize, oh my God, this is what I went through. Like, I thought I had a perfect family, or I thought I had a, you know, a great relationship with my mom, or I thought it wasn't this bad, but I'm realizing it was really bad. Mm-hmm. And the reason why we want to get there, and, you know, it's a point on the journey, right? Because when you can see that objectively, like I was a child, I was in this situation, I endured X, Y, Z, then you can feel this amazing compassion and love for the little girl that you were, right? You start to prioritize the child that you were. And this changes everything. It's like almost like the axis of the earth, you know, shifts, because what happens is if you can get there, so start to really unpack what actually happened with a coach is really helpful, because part of what I do is I reflect back to people. Oh my gosh, this is what happened. Like, are you seeing this is what happened? They're like, wow, I didn't see it that way. You know, this is over time. And then you start to feel anger. Like, oh my God, I was just a kid, or that wasn't okay. That was unacceptable. And then that anger, that sadness, the grief on behalf of that child, it transforms into higher self-worth. It transforms into a fierceness, a passion. Like, I am not going to let anybody, you know, hurt this child inside of me. I'm not going to allow myself to shrink in moments. I'm not going to tolerate people who XYZ, you know? So when we can get to a place, and it takes time, and I respect everyone's organic pace, because it's not something you want to rush. You know, some people are like, I'm going to heal this tomorrow. It's like, yeah. They say in trauma healing, slow is fast. So almost the slower and deeper you go with the process, the more effective it is, rather than trying to rush through it. But when you can feel anger about what happened to you, and again, this is another taboo thing. It's not like you need to talk to your mom and be angry at her directly. It's more like just feeling inside, wow, I was innocent. I was a little girl. I was precious. And I was so unsafe. I was in a terrible situation, whatever that was. So whatever that version is for you, just like reckoning with what happened and then feeling the resultant feelings. Mm-hmm. And I've witnessed this many times of women who are just like, you know, that turns into passion, that turns into immense growth, it turns into higher standards for themselves. And by accessing the anger and grief, it's almost like a muscle that is propelling you out into your true purpose. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And I think it's really important to point out, like, two things can be true. And I talk about this a lot in my work with stepmoms. Mm-hmm. Like, I cannot like being a stepmom, and I can love my stepkids.
I love that. Yes.
I can not like certain aspects of our co-parenting relationship. I can have a little bit of resentment towards my husband for how his past has affected our future, and still be very grateful for the life that we're building together.
Totally.
Two things can be true. So it's always kind of this joke in our family. So my sisters and I think we deal with our past just with joking. Like, we make jokes, sure, and tell the stories. And, you know, then we used to do this all the time. And then like our husbands were there and they're like, that's not funny. Like,
yeah,
that's abusive, or that's not funny. Like, that's trauma. And we're like, yeah, you know, but we're fine. Like, you rub it off. Like, that's your defense mechanism.
Totally.
But you can look back on your childhood and say, that was really traumatizing for me. My needs weren't actually being met in that moment. Mm-hmm. And my mom and dad did the best that they could with what they had in that moment.
Right, exactly.
You know, I have a great relationship with my mom. And some of the stuff she was dealing with at that time also really was traumatizing for me. Really, both can be true. And exactly. I think that is where the power comes from, right? So it's not a blaming thing. It's about saying, like, and I remember you saying this in our first podcast episode, when you realize that our mothers were actually just like wounded little children walking around, then they had babies. Like, we're all just trying to like figure things out.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Both can be true. Exactly. Like, my mom tried her best and I suffered. And I think sometimes it's okay to give yourself permission to just be with yourself and not think about your mom for a while. Mm-hmm. And just be in that place of like, the child in you is more important right now. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that can be difficult, because it's like, well, am I a bad daughter because I'm not thinking about my mom? So the way that we heal that is, yes, both can be true. And we have to put the child in us as more important than our mothers.
Totally.
We can't heal if we're still like, but mom, but mom, but mom. That's a little girl place that we're trying to like feel safe by putting ourselves a bit lower than mom. And the truth is, we have to eventually, I mean, it's not like we do this in a day or something. This is like many years for most people. But eventually we can get to that place where we're like, totally, mom was a human being. She did the best she could. She couldn't be different. It is what it is. But in order to get to that really solid acceptance place, we have to allow ourselves to feel rage and to also feel sad and maybe not think about our moms as much for a while. Mm-hmm. But we will return and have this acceptance, but we have to give ourselves permission to like, just like not be codependent with our mothers for a while. Does that make sense?
Oh, 100%. And,
yeah,
you know, I was thinking about another thing that can be true, because we, you know, we talk about enmeshment and you talk a lot about like, you know, sometimes the relationship is so toxic that it's just not best for you, right? You know, I was talking about prioritizing peace and, you know, sometimes relationships with family members, they just separate. And I think this comes up a lot, especially around the holidays and things like that. But
yeah,
you can also set really strong boundaries with your mom or your parents or family members, like,
yeah,
and say, you know, I don't think it's best that they're part of my life. And I love them and wish them the best on their journey, right? Like both can be true on that too. Like you can love them, but not let them be part of your everyday life because you do need to protect that piece. You protect the person that you are now and, you know, how you show up for your children too.
Exactly. And I love that process of helping women kind of like do that process of like, let's see what boundaries feel good right now and how that affects things because maybe that's all that's needed. Like maybe just a few different tweaks to the relationship could work. And sometimes we have to train our mothers or our, you know, mothers-in-law or whatever. We have to train them a little bit on like what our boundaries are and then what happens if they get broken, if they break the boundary. And then usually mothers or mothers-in-law are like, they want the relationship. So if they want the relationship with you, they're going to come around, a lot of them. And some mothers or mothers-in-law can't. Mm-hmm. So then we get to, okay, well, that didn't work. What are options now? So for many people, it's, you know, it's a journey of, and each step is empowering, right? Because it gives you the opportunity to do what you couldn't do as a little girl, which is to respectfully and honestly and firmly speak your truth and prioritize yourself. So it's all rich learning and growthful stuff.
Mm-hmm. So good. So let's talk about stepmoms for a second. And I was thinking about this morning again, as I was prepping for this. It's like, do you think stepmoms experience these complicated relationships maybe with their stepdaughters any differently based on the way that society looks at stepmoms versus the moms? Because I've talked a lot about this and, you know, we're all about moms keeping it real now, right? Like the narrative really has changed. So it's okay for a mom to be like, I am at my wit's end with my kid. Mm-hmm. I can't wait for March break to be over. Like the kids got to go back to school or these kids are driving me nuts. They're encouraged to keep it real about the ups and downs of motherhood. But a stepmom who often has the kids sometimes just as much as the mom and is doing all of the things and doing the self-sacrificing and, you know, a lot of our worth as women is wrapped up in how we care for others and, you know, how we're showing up, but they're not getting the same accolades. And when they do say, I'm struggling right now, or I can hardly stand what's going on in my home right now, or my stepkids are driving me crazy or whatever's going on. Not to mention that they don't have that biological connection. So there's all of that, but they're almost like crucified for that, right? Like they're judged for that. It's like, well, you knew what you were signing up for. Like, what did you expect?
Right.
So it's very different. So I'm like, okay, does the mother wound show up any differently, or the complexities of the mother-daughter relationship, is it different for the mother-stepdaughter relationship, right? Like, are they more triggering? You know, it's just interesting.
Yeah. I think there's a massive potential for that. Yeah. Because it seems like the theme is the stepmother has this extra layer of being the outsider. Mm-hmm. And so she doesn't get that like idealization that like bio moms get, you know, like I gave birth to you. I held you in my body for 9 months. And I, you know, like that type of like reverence that we tend to have for moms, even in the kind of yucky ways. Stepmoms don't tend to get that. Mm-hmm. Depending upon how dysfunctional the family is, and the father slash husband, whatever, those are big determinants. How dysfunctional are they baseline? Because the more dysfunctional they are, the more the stepmom's going to be like more of a scapegoaty black sheep type of energy. Because she's like a new projection screen for stuff in the family, like a dumping ground.
Oh yeah, punching bag.
Punching bag, whatever metaphor you want to use. So I think those are big factors.
Yeah, but I think also, again, and I've said that this has been really important for me in my work and when I'm talking to a lot of stepmoms, I've always said like the best resources for stepmoms actually have nothing to do with being a stepmom.
Interesting.
And it's about doing the work on yourself.
Yeah.
So there's a list of books that I recommend and your book is one of them and the How to Do the Work, The Boundary Boss, you know, all of these, you know, diving into your attachment and maybe why certain things are triggering you the way they are. Based on your childhood, right? Like your wounding impacts how you experience these situations when they show up in your stepfamily life, whether it's like something from the ex or not feeling good enough or, you know, just where you're at in your own confidence level. So yeah, I think it's really interesting just to like even look at the mother wound and like from a step-parent's perspective, what messaging even maybe we got from our own step-parents too, right?
Absolutely. And some women that are moms or stepmoms now, they had maybe a mom and a stepmom. And so the mother wound can be like part of a composite, you know, of both. You kind of have two mother wounds, or one mother wound that is like, has complexity with two mother figures. So it can get complex. But yeah, I absolutely agree with you. The best way to go is to just do your own inner work, because then you can have insights about why things are hitting certain ways for you. And then the really empowering part is like realizing that and then being like making a choice, rather than it being like an automatic default of like, you know, just things like that are problematic, like beliefs about yourself, like I'm not good enough or I'm not included, things that feel like tough to live with. We can get that empowerment from being like, okay, what am I making this mean? And what are my choices? Like a powerful question I invite all my students to say is, what's the most empowering response that I can bring to this situation? And really pause and be like, you know, what would be most empowering for me? Knowing what I know about myself and how I want this to play out, you know, it's almost like a puzzle. It makes it less heavy and it makes it less disempowering, because the disempowerment already happened in our childhoods. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of the heaviness and the pain that we carry around is not from something that's necessarily happening now. It's something that happened a long time ago that we survived, but we haven't quite digested it and processed it. So when that's the case, we tend to, you know, project shit on other people that we don't even realize we're doing it. So I like to say, my therapist always says this, triggers are treasures. Mm-hmm. So whenever you're triggered, it's a treasure. There's a gift in there for you. And so I find that, and I made this, you know, pact with myself a long time ago, that that's how I'm going to live my life. I'm not going to worry about, am I healed yet? Why is this shit still coming up for me? Instead, see it like an adventure. Like, okay, next level. Here's my next level, a huge trigger. What is this offering me? What is this trying to teach me? How can I respond in an empowered way? And the people that can play the long game in that way, with how you see your life as your curriculum for this lifetime, you know, the more fun you're going to have, the faster you're going to go, and the more, you know, you're going to experience that alchemy, that really yummy alchemy of like, how can I transform this situation? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting. I was having this conversation with my husband once. We were talking about, you know, my mom, and then we were talking and we were just like having a big debrief, you know? So we're talking about my mom, and then we're talking about some issues we were having with the ex. And I was like, gosh, you know, they're like the exact same, like the two of them, like the similarities between the two of them is crazy.
Interesting.
We're like, what are the chances of that? Maybe that's the lesson I need to learn. And then I was like, or what is it about me that is interpreting these behaviors based on, you know, my own wounding, that this is triggering me in a certain way? Like, they're two very different people. Like, obviously they have similarities, or we have similar situations and stuff. But I was like, you know, what is the lesson here for me? Like, how am I interpreting this differently?
Right.
Right. Because we're seeing things based on our own wounding and stuff. I'm like, oh, so it's my lack of control, feeling good enough until I'm not, like feeling the abandonment wound, like all of those things. I'm like, oh yeah, actually they're not the same at all. I'm just like literally walking around looking for confirmation to the stories that I've been telling myself.
Right. Beautifully put. Yeah, exactly. There's a child in us that really, you know, because similarities and template, it's like our brains actually do that. The brain is looking, trying to find similarities so that we can make as less decisions as possible and we can just survive. Mm-hmm. So there is that confirmation bias, and that's real. And just knowing that can be super helpful, because then we can reflect and say, you know, that's the PowerPoint, is where we have power, is how we see things. We can't control other people. We can't control what they think, how they feel, how they see us. We can only control, you know, how we see things. And that lens that we got as kids based on our own family of origin is like a default in our brain. It's like a super highway. We just go down those highways. And so we have to build those new pathways. And the way we build them, the way the brain changes, is through having a trigger. The original thing gets triggered, and then we make a new choice, you know? Mm-hmm. But it has to happen many times. It's almost like we need that repetition. It's like making a new path in the woods. We need to walk down it many, many, many times before it's a clear path. Mm-hmm. So that's why a lot of us, you know, we didn't have parents that modeled, oh, triggers are treasures. It's just like a normal human thing that we have to go through.
Yeah. My parents were not saying that. They were screaming and swearing.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, we live in an interesting time to transform this stuff.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. Well, and it goes back to what we were talking about, like your North Star was, you know, being empowered and like, what's the best thing for me? Like mine's like peace. Like, how do you get that into your life? So that's how you respond to those situations. That's how you carve that new way or that new path. Mm-hmm. That's so good.
So good.
How would you as a mom, because now as a mom, I'm like, okay, how do I not screw my kids up? Like, how do I not give them the mother wounds? Like, and obviously we're all going to do this in some way, shape or form. Like, and that's the thing. That's the difference between our generation, right? Like we're like, oh yeah, we know we're screwing our kids up, but we're just trying our best every single day. Right.
Right.
Is there anything that as women we can do and be conscious of in the way that we're treating our daughters to try to prevent it as much as possible?
Yeah, I would say absolutely. The number one thing to minimize passing on the mother wound is to heal your own mother wound as much as possible. What ends up happening is if you don't do the inner child work, what tends to happen is the child in you sees your own child or stepchild as a competitor or as a obstacle. And so it creates a tension between your inner child and your kid. And so that's where the mother wound really happens, right? So what I've seen in my clients and students is when they start to give their inner child the love, the compassion, the attention they need, it creates enormous emotional availability for their own child. So it's like you tuck in your inner child safely and securely inside of you, and there's so much more energy and love for your own kid. If you don't, it's like the child in you is like, you know, there's like this energy towards the child, almost an aggression. You know, it's there, but you can't really control it. It can feel out of control in moments, the trigger. So it's really about, you know, mothering yourself first and loving yourself first and not seeing as another kid on your list that you have to take care of, but more like, this is my special child. This is the one that, you know, I also have to take care of. And if you prioritize her, it automatically sets up just a more smooth energy with your own child. And a lot of those really sticky moments can calm way, way down. So that's my main recommendation. You can do to start an inner child practice, it's just so powerful because your child can sense that there's another hostile energy around. And it's not like you're intending that. It's not like you're even in control of it. But when you make it conscious, then your child can really feel the truth of your love for them and you're wanting to be with them. And I think the inner child unhealed can be an obstacle, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Makes so much sense.
Have you ever felt that? I mean, does that resonate?
Yeah, it feels like until I did the work, I've said if Darren and I wouldn't be married if I didn't do the work that I did. Mm. Or we would have had a very toxic relationship. Like that I know for sure. Like the very beginning of our marriage was really, I thought I was okay. Like I remember thinking like, you know, our childhood was a little screwed up, but like that's fine. Or my relationships is fine. And then I came in and I saw my stepkids and I started to be a parent to them. And I started to see how family should be, but then I had my old tendencies and my patterns of control and like perfectionism and scared of abandonment. Like all these things were like coming up.
Right.
And it was just like everything hit me. Wow. And it's true. Like I didn't have maybe the capacity to show up for them in the way that, you know, I do now because I was just, everything had come to the forefront for me.
Right.
So it's true. Like you only have so much bandwidth, right? You have only so much bandwidth and you're just trying to get through the day. And so a lot of my stuff really came to the forefront when I became a parent. And then I don't know if you've seen that meme where it's like this girl's like talking about how like she's trying to like heal her inner child while parenting this one. And it's just like this very, you know, conflicting thing, right? Like you have to take care of yourself, but you also have this kid that you don't want to feel the way that you felt. And so it's like this.
It's a lot,
right? It's just add one more thing to the list of things that the women need to do.
It's so much. And my goal in my work is to get people to a certain place where they start to feel there's a certain place where you get it. And there's a nice flow where it's like the child in you isn't just another task, another chore on this like extremely long thing. It's your reservoir. It's that place where you feel nurtured and nourished and you know that there's a link between what you give to yourself and how it makes everything go smoother. And I went through that myself. I don't have kids of my own, but I do, you know, I remember I totally didn't want to do the inner child work for a while. I was like, I don't want to do that. I already have enough. shit going on. But I started to see that actually, if I don't mother this inner child, like I become the child. And then, oh my God, it's way more work than it is to do inner child work. It's like, choose your hard, right? Do you want the hard of doing the inner mothering work? Or do you want the hard of constantly blending with your inner child and feeling abandoned, feeling like a little girl, feeling out of control? And that blending with the inner child is really dangerous for the children around us when we become a child and they're definitely not safe because we can't see clearly. And then that's a whole nother level of hard when we have to actually repair with the children around us because of our out of controlness, because of the child in us is in distress. Mm-hmm. So it's choose your hard. And I say, and I love getting people to a place where they're just like, I see it, you know, the hard that I want, that's a good hard that gets me somewhere is the inner mothering work. And that's my priority. Because what happens is when the kid in you is tucked in, safe, she feels safe with you, you're in a consistent relationship, she calms down. And it's like, you can feel your adult self in the driver's seat. And there's something just so sovereign and amazing about that. Like there's a lightness that comes with that inner mothering work where the child in you is safe enough. She really trusts you. And then there's not these ups and downs like there was before. And you can really feel your kind of like sovereign, stable okayness in you. And that's like a foundation. That's like a really solid place to be.
Because then when you're triggered, you can see things differently too, right? So you're, you know, for the longest time, I've just kind of mentioned like my abandonment wound, I thought like I wasn't good enough, like people are going to leave. So it was very triggering for me and my relationship when Darren would be late or he wouldn't communicate. And I'm going to tell you, my husband is amazing at a lot of things. Communication is not his, right? So when he's in the moment and based on his works, like he could be in a moment with also with like a client that he can't just be like, I'm sorry, my wife has an abandonment wound. I just got to make sure she knows I'm not, right? But I would go and I would storytell, right? So he's late and then he's maybe an hour and a half late. And then I've gone to the point where I've like planned our divorce. Like, you know what I mean? Like I've like, he's going to leave. Like he's with someone else. He's going to leave me. He doesn't respect me. Like all of those things. Right.
And oh my God, catastrophizing. Yeah.
That was how I would deal with it. And after doing the work, it was like, oh no, like this is just my child right now who just needed to know that someone was always going to be there no matter what. And I can talk to myself and be like, okay, there's your right. And then you can also, once you can identify that, you can communicate to your partner and say, hey, I know for you, that's not a big deal, but I just need you to know, like, this is what I experienced as a kid. And so this is what shows up for me. I don't need you to agree with it, but I just need you to understand, like, this is where I go. So if you could support me in this by, you know, communicating, whatever, stuff like that. But, you know, just those little things, right? But my storyline could have been, you know, we could have got divorced and I could have been like, what a jackass husband. He would always be like an hour and a half late or 2 hours late. He wouldn't call, like didn't care about me, didn't respect me. I know Darren respects me and loves me and cares, but right? So it's like your story.
Yeah. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy of the child's wounds. You can create a self-fulfilling prophecy because there's no adult in us yet to put it in the proper context, which is you're feeling this distress because that's what mom and dad did all the time. But that's not what's happening now. I know it feels like it, but it's not that. I'm here with you, little B, you know, and I'm with you and I'm always going to be with you, you know, no matter what happens. And, you know, he's just late and blah, blah, blah. Like you can just calm. It's like that regulation. But it's amazing to like put that example as I know how to regulate now and I could, that could have gone a totally different route.
That would have been my whole story, right? And then my kid's story, like, this is why we got divorced. Your dad never respect me. And then like, what kind of wounding would that have given them?
I mean, that's happened, that's happening. And it's happened to so many couples because this isn't part of their daily life yet. The inner child work and how to unblend from childhood stories that sabotage ourselves and our relationships.
Yeah, it's wild.
I mean, if you think about even war, like what's happening in the world, there's a lot of inner children running shit right now with guns and with, you know, not seeing what's really happening, but seeing through the lineage of undigested pain of the past as if it's happening now. So this stuff has really big implications.
So good. Oh my gosh. I could talk to you forever about all of this. This has been such a good conversation. Thank you so much for taking time. What do you got going on right now? Anything to share?
Yeah.
Pimp yourself out because your resources truly are just life-changing.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I have my main online course, which is Healing the Mother Wound. And it's a 7-step process that's taught in online course format. And that's available anytime of the year. And I also have a bunch of like little mini courses on, you know, healing self-sabotage, healing the inner teenager. There's a Bolder Boundaries course as well. And those are like little mini courses. And yeah, so if you go to my website, BethanyWebster.com, you can get all of that, including a free ebook. There's also a free email course that's all about the inner child. So if you're somebody who's like, I kind of want to get into that more, the inner child work, that's a totally free email course. That's really good. I put a lot of my yummiest stuff in there. And that's on BethanyWebster.com.
So good. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And thank you to everybody listening and who's like considering going into doing this work. If you're a new listener, I'm really excited that you're here because, you know, the more of us that do this work, the better chances we have as humanity and the planet, you know, for these trying times that we're in. So thank you.
That's it for this one. Thank you so much for tuning in. And if this episode resonated with you, I'd be so grateful if you could share it with someone in your life who you think could benefit from it. And if you haven't already left a rating and a review on iTunes, it really is the best way to support the show. And if you're craving more real talk and coaching and community, be sure to check out my membership, the Kickass Stepmom Community. Head to www.kickassstepmom.com to learn more.